You're listening to Voyager, a Vaughn Group podcast where we sit down with innovators, artists, and visionaries from a variety of industries and dig into their journeys. I'm Travis Vaughn, and today I'm with Bobby John. Bobby is the founder of Band of Coders, a custom software engineering company with offices across North America and Argentina. Bobby has received a bunch of accolades throughout his career, including Canada's Entrepreneur of the Year and Canada's Top 40 Leaders Under the Age of 40 Award. Today, we'll talk about what it was like to get his first Commodore 64, hiring someone away from Steve Jobs, parental expectations, how to grow a startup into an international company, and whether or not the Toronto Raptors actually play basketball in Toronto, at least this year anyway. So sit back, relax, enjoy the podcast. Here with Bobby John in the podcast studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you're here.
Good to be here.
Yeah. So Band of Coders, but you're also a computer engineer. You're from Toronto, not from Atlanta. So when did you move here to Atlanta?
15 years ago.
Okay.
I moved for love.
So you moved because of your wife? I didn't know that.
To close the deal.
Oh, wow. And that's right. She is from Atlanta.
She's from Atlanta. Well, for anyone who's out there dating an American, just know that it is impossible to get an American to move to Canada.
Okay. So you moved to Atlanta instead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but Canadians are all nice though, right?
It was nice enough
to
move.
You're pretty nice for the most part.
I guess that's a stereotype. Yeah.
So Canada's Entrepreneur of the Year, obviously that didn't happen last year. How do you get to a title, Canada's Entrepreneur? What is that? And who awarded you that?
I think it was one of the banks.
Okay.
Probably, or a conglomerate of banks that were giving out awards to entrepreneurs.
So what were you doing at the time?
That was my first company.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's back up before you were at that company. So your undergrad, computer engineering.
Yes.
Okay. So what were you doing before college that you were beginning to think, okay, this might be a career path for me?
When I look back, I've always been a builder, like anything I could build. So whether that was model planes or trains or airplane, like just anything get your hands on. I loved building things. Then when personal computers came out, you know, just like had an affinity to it right away. My first one was the Commodore 64.
I was going to say, was it a Commodore 64?
Yes. And you know, that was one of the, you know, even to this day, like it's rare to have like a personal computer with a commercial,
right,
and a jingle.
Right.
And, you know, and colorful and all those things. So it was right ahead of its time in so many ways. But I remember every time that commercial came on the TV, I would just get it to full volume so my parents would be woken up from their bedroom because I needed them to buy it for me.
Oh, wow.
And I'd go run in and sing the song and
so everything. Was it a Christmas present or was it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just a nagging them to death present. We were, you know, we came from a lower middle class family, immigrants. So, you know, it wasn't a easy purchase by any means. And I remember when we bought it, we just bought the CPU. And back then, the keyboard and the CPU were all together. We couldn't afford the recording device. So, you know, anytime I wrote a program or something, I would just have to leave the computer on. Because if anybody turned it off, I would lose it.
Because
you couldn't save.
Wow.
There was no way to save.
So what were you doing with the Commodore 64 the first year you had it? Do you remember some of the things you did with it right away?
Yeah, I was mostly doing games.
Okay.
Just kind of
do you remember
games.
What the games were?
Nah, they're really simple, like word games. It was all in BASIC. It wasn't even really super graphical at that point.
Okay.
But definitely, you know, I generate a love for computers right then and then and never really turned back.
Wow.
Since.
Wow. So you ended up going to the University of Toronto right away. Is that was the direction you wanted to head?
Well, you know, I'm Indian. So you only get a few options from your parents, doctor, lawyer, or engineer.
Okay.
So it's narrowed down for you very quickly in the beginning. My mom's vote was doctor, but I faint when I see blood to this day.
Yeah, so, you married a doctor.
So I married a doctor, someone else to take care of the blood part of raising a family. So engineer was kind of, my mom would repeat it over and over again since I was born, subliminally hoping that I would go that way.
Wow.
And sure enough, I did.
Okay. So you get to the University of Toronto, and what kind of jobs did you have while you were in school?
Well, my first job, I mean, because, you know, here in the States, you don't have the same brands, but imagine that I was a busboy at IHOP.
Okay.
That would be my first job.
Okay. So that was not the year you won Canada's Entrepreneur of the Year?
No, I was 13 years old. Okay. Was my first job.
Okay.
And then from there, cashier at Walmart.
Okay.
Would be my second job.
Okay.
Then my third job would have been summer data entry job. That actually is the job that led me. I was doing data entry in that company and they asked me what else I liked. And I said, I love computer. And I was pretty fast. I was
right.
Really fast typer. And
do you remember how many words per minute?
Yeah, I was faster than my teacher.
Really?
I think like 120.
Oh my goodness.
Super fast. Typing came easy to me.
Wow. Okay.
And they gave me an opportunity to move to, it was a rechargeable battery R&D lab. And they moved me into the lab to write some code. So that was my first programming job.
Where were you working when you did get the bank awarded you
the
Canada's
award,
Entrepreneur?
Yeah.
Okay. So what were you doing at that point?
That was, I had started my company already. So okay. I graduated from school.
So you graduate from the University of Toronto and then you start the company?
No, actually I was in school.
Okay.
I'm doing my computer engineering degree and I walk in, it's my third year, and I walk into the computer lab to do one of my assignments, and I look over someone's shoulder and I see them looking at a screen with a big capital N flashing in the corner, and they're hitting these blue underlying links and moving around, and I go, what is that? And he turns to me and goes, it's the internet.
Okay, so what year is this?
This would have been 95 or 6.
Okay, which also dates you, of course. But mm-hmm.
And so I was just like, what? And then he was explaining it to me. And as soon as the picture came in my head, I was like, this is going to change the world.
Wow.
And I was in my third year. My intention was to go work at Microsoft as a programmer, was my plan. And right around that time, I listened to Bill Gates do a speech. And they asked him if Microsoft's going to do anything about the internet. And he said, no. The internet's just an extension of the network. We don't need to do anything special. It would be like building our own hydro or electricity plant.
Okay.
And so then I decided I'm not going to Microsoft.
Okay.
And I couldn't really find any companies in Canada yet that had really embraced the internet. So, and I was just so passionate about it. So in my third year, I just started my own.
So can you talk about that first company?
Sure. Yeah. It was called Caught in the Web. And the whole idea was, you know, to bring corporations or Fortune 500 companies onto the internet. So,
really?
You know, yeah, you would literally, I'd be in meetings and boardrooms explaining, you know, you need to buy this domain name. You need, you know, here's what a blue underlined link means. It's a hyperlink. And here's how the whole concept of a web page works. And, you know, it was a lot.
What was it like trying to explain that at that point in time?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I'm really young. So, you know, I'm in my 20s walking into huge boardrooms.
Right.
Our first client was Warner Music.
Okay.
Now the idea there was like, you know, you couldn't buy or sell on the internet yet. The technology didn't exist. So it was mainly a promotional tool. And as I was thinking through who promotes but doesn't sell, the record labels came to mind because they don't sell anything directly. They just promote.
Right.
So we got Warner Music and then we got Sony Music. Then we got A&M Records and we just one by one got kind of the whole music industry in Canada and all the artists and building out all their web presence.
Wow. And so how long did it take to do that?
Years.
To build?
Yeah, I mean, years to close the deals and build them out. And, you know, they all had different visions.
Okay. So Caught in the Web.
Caught
that
in
was
web.
The name of it. That was your first?
Mm-hmm. And that would be when I was in school. I was still in school when we started that.
Okay. But you have, I mean, there's several companies in your history. So what were you doing after Caught in the Web? What was next?
So Caught in the Web, that was the company that kind of probably put me on the map in Canada. It's one of the early young founders of an internet-based organization. That's where all the awards came. That's where a lot of the press came from that.
Okay.
A lot of the TV coverage came from that.
Okay.
And when we grew to about, you know, when we crossed around 150 people, I was feeling a little bit over my head, actually, in leading the organization.
Okay.
So I went on the search to find a CEO.
Okay.
I'm proud to say I hired someone away from Steve Jobs.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And you're how old at that point?
26. Oh, yeah. But, you know, Apple wasn't where it is today. back then. But nonetheless, right. The president of Apple Canada quit Apple and came to lead.
Okay.
Caught in the web. And then he wasn't even there for a year before we got a public company came after us for an acquisition.
Wow. Okay.
And we were acquired.
Wow. So how many more companies were you involved with before? Because I want to get to Band of Coders. But how many more were you involved with before?
After that, I went more into kind of angel investing and, you know, playing and starting stuff and, you know, things like that. So, it's hard to really put a count on it because you're kind of advising and you're on boards and you're co-founding. And
maybe I should ask, what were you most excited about before Band of Coders? What was a company or an investment you had that you were really, really excited about?
We moved to New York for my wife's residency. She was at NYU. And while there, I got to get my foot into financial services.
Okay.
And there there was a lady from the financial industry starting a loan syndication platform to settle syndicated loans.
Okay.
And she had given me a call. It was called Trade Settlement. And, you know, I came on board as, you know, the CTO, technical co-founder.
Right.
And we built this platform for the banks. And once again, I found myself walking into even bigger boardrooms of like JP Morgan and you name it, the big banks of New York City, and, you know, asking them to trust our platform to settle their $1 billion loans
that
they're making. And it was really fun. It was kind of the first SaaS product.
Okay.
One of the first financial services SaaS products. And there you're going through all these audits. And back then banks were even scared to have internet in their buildings.
Right.
So the idea of them trusting this was crazy, but I learned a lot. I learned a lot about how to work with them and learned how to build platforms that never go down.
Okay.
Right? And that would be super reliable.
Okay.
Because, you know, like the interest on $1 billion overnight is significant.
I would guess it is. Yes. And I would not know that, but you would. So you're still in your 20s at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
When did you go back to Toronto after New York?
No, my wife matched at NYU, so then we went there. I thought I was going to New York and I would get like a lot of time in this new marriage, but residency, like she just never came home.
Yeah, it's tough.
So that's where I went and did another startup and just immersed myself in that. And then after New York, we had our first child there.
Okay.
And, you know, it got kind of exhausting in New York City. Like I remember taking a cab when she was in labor, like 2 a.m, hand up in the air. Like,
yeah.
Hey, let's go to the hospital. So that's when we did summers in Toronto, winters in Atlanta.
Okay.
But then once the kids started going to school, that became harder. I'm not a big fan of snow, so here I am.
Makes sense. 15 years later, you're still in Atlanta. You know, I was thinking, so your wife, she's a pediatrician. When she was doing her residency, I was thinking about your background. Is there anything in your industry close to a residency? Anything that compares?
No, not really. I mean, a residency is such an old concept, but it's also, there's a hazing component to it.
Okay.
And I do think we more or less skipped the concept of hazing.
Okay.
And keeping you up, you know, just for the sake of it, or you have to pay your dues as much. It could be slightly because of the demand and because, you know, you can go off on your own so easily, which isn't as easy. Like you can't become a doctor without going through residency. It's just part of the rules, the rule base. And what's amazing about technology is there are no rules. Like if you're really good at what you do and you are in kindergarten, someone will hire you.
Right, right. Well, let's do this. Let's go to Band of Coders.
Sure.
So Band of Coders, when did that get started? How did it get started?
Band of Coders came out of two things. First, the company that I had started had a lot of the pioneers in Canada when it came to the internet. Of course, these are also like the way I found employees was going to the caves of the university and saying, have you ever heard of the internet? Because we had to find programmers for something that, you know, nobody knew about yet and we had to track them down. And so we really had an interesting crew. But what happened is after they got acquired by the public company, I didn't go with it. It was my number one. Like my request when they came to buy us was, I'm okay with selling under one condition, I'm not coming.
Okay.
Because I just didn't think I would fit in a 10,000 person company.
Right.
It just wasn't me. And they had agreed, so they bought it.
Okay.
And I didn't have to go with it. But my employees ended up going. And a lot of them, you know, grew into executive positions because they were so well-versed in the technology 10 years later. But now they're all phoning me when their projects are running into a problem and saying, hey, do you have anyone to come help? So before you know it, I've got engineers again helping all my friends solve the problems in their jobs because half their projects are kind of off the rails.
Right.
And, you know, it's starting to look a bit like a company.
And this is when?
This would have been 2003, 2004.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is before you moved to Atlanta, right?
Yeah, we're doing the back and forth.
Right, okay.
Summers in Toronto,
okay.
Winters in Atlanta. And, you know, they were, it was the idea with Bandicoders once it like officially took, you know, it took a spot was kind of my ex-employees were like not so happy being in a big firm either.
Right.
And, you know, I had told them, okay, well, if you want to do it again, I'll show you how to build kind of the next version of Caught in the Web. And they showed up and said, we're the Band of Coders.
Okay.
Like they came up with the name.
It
was a bunch of engineers.
Oh, wow.
And we kind of took a blank piece of paper and say, like, how would we do this from scratch? And, you know, it was this, you know, this brainstorming of version two and being very engineering focused.
So they get credit for naming it Band of Coders.
You sure do.
You didn't do that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's dive into a little bit of the how. So you come together as a group. We're going to do this together. It's going to be Band of Coders. Talk about this, the different components that go into founding a company like this. How are you doing that?
I mean, you start with your why or like what's different. Like why does a company even need to be created? It can't just be for the fun of it or I want to be a boss or... you know, those things, like you have to actually provide a value, hopefully a value that's something different than what anyone else is providing.
What did you feel like you guys were providing different from everyone else at the time?
Well, we knew we had very high caliber engineers, right? Like, so when you have engineers that have a choice, mm-hmm. like that's where you start, where they're like, I can go anywhere I want and I have too many choices.
And some of these guys you knew since college, right?
Sure.
Okay. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you knew they could write their own ticket.
Okay.
And yet nothing that was out there really satisfied them.
Okay.
For various reasons. And, you know, it's not just the technical challenge, but, you know, we all know what, you know, generally people like autonomy, people like authority, people like to be challenged, people like to be rewarded. So you have that whole gamut that needs to come together for true satisfaction. And when we were thinking Band of Coders, we're thinking, how do we give an engineer that? Because you can always get like maybe one or two of those components at any job.
Right.
Or even you might get it at the beginning and then it fades away. But how do we design a company where the best engineers want to work? And, you know, if you know the mind of engineers, like what really drives them is they want to do their best work.
Right.
So they want a great place to work. And the definition of a great place to work is a place where they can do their best work. And that's where Band of Coders kind of came to this concept of let's bring the best engineers. Let's connect them with clients that want to do good work, that appreciate the power.
Like who were some of the early clients early on?
Yeah, a lot of the early clients were startups.
Were they?
Yeah, a lot of founders.
So what were they asking for?
I mean, everything you see today, somebody tried back then.
Okay.
So someone tried to make YouTube.
Okay.
Someone tried to make Gmail. Someone tried to make Uber. Like, you know, like every pets.com, like everyone that, you know, we're now like coming... Timing is so important for internet startups. So I assure you pretty well everything you see today was tried in 2002, 2003, or during the dot-com.
So it's internet startups. That's primarily who your customer was.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the, what would the team have said, this is the problem that we're trying to solve for these clients? What would that have been?
I mean, generally what, you know, you see in building software, internet's just, it's still software. It's connected software. That would be the big change from the old days of kind of desktop applications or client server. But when you're building software, and what excites me so much about software and why I've been in it this long and I will continue to be in it till the end is I really look at it as a way of taking someone's genius and someone's experience and turning it into code so the whole world can enjoy it.
Okay.
So, you know, some people, the old way to do that in my mind is a book.
Right.
But software actually does what the person knows for you. You don't just have to read it and then go do it yourself. And so when we, as a company, when we're talking to a founder, what's so, so exciting about it. And the best part of it is talking to them. Because then they're like, you know what I figured out in the last 20 years? I figured out a way to do this. And I've repeated it over and over again. And now I want to scale that. And I can only be in so many places at once. And software is my answer. And so then we literally have to pull it every detail out of their head. And then we got to turn it into millions of lines of code. And then we got to turn around and give it out to the world. And we're giving that person out. And it's software, the power of it, it's free to give out, really. It doesn't cost you anything to ship software from here to Timbuktu.
Right.
Right. It's the same as sending it to Roswell. Same cost.
And that's Roswell, Georgia, not Roswell, Georgia. New Mexico.
Right.
Just for the audience either. Sake.
Yes.
Yes, that's a suburb of Atlanta. Okay, so when did you begin to think, okay, this band of coders, we have something here. This is going to be more than just 3 or 4 years of my life.
Yeah, I mean, we were attracting really good talent. We were, you know, a big measure for engineers is how long does your code stay out there and keep running? And, you know, a lot of the code we wrote was still out there running 5, 10, 15 years later.
Okay.
So, I mean, for me as the CEO, kind of looking back at the quality of what we're building, you know, do we have people who can truly sit down with a visionary, understand their needs, and actually translate that into code and actually serve the world with something valuable? And you see that happen over and over. You're like, okay, this is good.
Right.
We might need more of this. And that's when, you know, we officially made the decision, okay, we're going to go out there and start offices around the country, and they're all going to be run by an engineer. And that's kind of our uniqueness is
right.
We have one of our core values is whoever makes the promise needs to deliver on it.
Okay.
And so the Band of Coders model is you as a client talk to the lead engineer who mm-hmm. is going to make a commitment on what and how much and who is going to work on your project. And they make the promise and then they stay there until it's delivered, as opposed to the other models where salesperson makes promise, signs it, throws it over the fence, engineer wakes up, sees a piece of paper and a promise and a quote and a timeline.
Right.
And knows right from the beginning it's impossible, but pretends that it is.
Okay. So it's 17, 18 years old now. So, I mean, because you're wired as an entrepreneur. You're not somebody who's just going to stay. So what have you done over the 17, 18 years? Because you're still CEO, Band of Coders. You're still there. What are you doing over the past 2 decades?
I mean, we probably went through 3 versions of trying to get that model working.
Okay.
So I would say you're right. I wouldn't be interested if it was the same. And now it's just a cookie cutter. I'd probably hand it off to an operator.
Right.
But I still feel we're refining the model and to scale it to be like, okay, we can go to 100 offices or 200 offices, which means for us 200 engineers leading
right.
a company more or less. Or an
How many offices does Band of Coders have around the country now?
Right now we're 7.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You're in Nashville, San Diego, Wisconsin, here in Atlanta. Toronto, you're in Washington
Toronto.
Also, right?
Mm-hmm. Toronto.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, for us, it's, and then we have our offshore centers
okay.
that service, because when an office needs talent in Toronto or Argentina or another country, we can bring that into. And so each leader is given all the tools to service their customers and serve them well. And each office is kind of designed to have a maximum of 10
okay.
customers at any time. So quality is kind of a really high bar for us
okay.
and doing it well. And when you think about scaling, it's, you know, probably the way an engineer would think about it is like, how do you do this in a way, maintain quality and scale? And for us, every time it's spinning up another office, which means
okay.
finding another lead engineer in another city, spinning them up. We have all the shared support services around them that take care of all the stuff that they shouldn't be focusing on so they can focus on the client and deliver good work.
And most recently, you've launched where? What's the newest office? Is that the one in Madison? Or I'm sorry, Milwaukee?
Yeah, it was Milwaukee or Nashville.
Okay.
Yeah, one of those.
Okay. So, well, I want to talk a little bit about 2020 for Band of Coders, but first I want to ask you, what does a day in the life of not just someone at Band of Coders, but what does a day in the life of Bobby John look like? I think people hate that question.
Yeah, but my day probably looks like most CEOs' days, at least an experienced CEO's day. You leave 50% of the day free for something to go wrong.
Okay.
And you wait for that to happen.
Okay.
And you make sure you have a little bit of space to deal with it.
So what are you doing while you're waiting?
Trying my best not to do something.
Okay.
You know, not to do anything that'll, you know, draw me away or get, like, trying not to start another business is probably the hardest thing.
You're trying not to start another business. Okay.
Yes. Just keep telling myself, don't start another business. Start another business. Stay.
Because I guess you've done that a few times over the past.
Yeah, it's very tempting. And, you know, when you're a technologist and you have access to talent.
Yeah.
And not to say that there is a story of me starting a business actually recently, but, you know, you could have started one a day if you wanted, because you see a problem, you have the talent to solve it, and you have the background.
So how does that typically happen with you? Is that you, okay, I think I want to start a business, or are you going into one of the other offices and saying, hey, would you like to do, let's start something together? How does that, is it you wanting to do it? Are you asking your team?
I just see a problem.
Okay.
And you're just like, someone's got to solve this. And you're tempted to solve it and you shouldn't.
Okay.
You know, there is a lot more to a business than just solving the problem.
Right.
If you've been there, you know that. So
what, and again, I do want to talk 2020, but what has been maybe a big, big problem that you guys have tackled, that Band of Coders has tackled over the past 2 or 3 years that really stands out as, wow, that was huge, but we were able to do it. We were able to finish this.
I mean, it's actually in 2020 is the one that'll stand out at this point.
Okay. So talk about that.
Well, we have COVID hitting us and, you know, my wife's a pediatrician and I find she's on unemployment. And I'm like, hey, I didn't marry a doctor for instability. I'm the unstable one, the entrepreneur.
Right.
Who'd have thought that, you know, a pediatrician could be on unemployment. But what happened, if you just ask her, is the patient load just dried up overnight. And when you really dug in on why, it's because of the waiting room.
Okay. That's why.
The model for medicine and especially pediatrics is fill the waiting room with people and then, you know, spend whatever your 7 to 10 minutes with each patient and cycle through 30 patients a day. And that all falls apart if no one's willing to sit in your waiting room.
Okay.
And waiting rooms aren't designed to be 6 feet apart. They aren't. And especially with kids, it's even scarier because there's no seat belts.
Right.
To hold them in place.
Yes.
So anyways, it all dried up. And, you know, when I really dug into why and I understood it was a waiting room, I was like, this is solvable. And that's when we started the solution, which was moving the waiting room to the parking lot. And what would that look like? And what would it be like if a patient could just drive up and click a button and say, I'm here.
Right.
And when the doctor is ready to see you, the app tells you, okay, now come in, and you just get more or less red carpet service and you go straight into the exam room.
So I'm guessing you can talk about that product now,
sure,
right?
Yeah, we launched that.
Okay. So how does it work today?
So the product is called OneMD, and it's basically an app that allows patients to prepare for their appointment at home and allows them to wait anywhere they want before their doctor's ready to see them.
Okay.
So when they arrive, whether it's at a coffee shop or whether it's in the car or whatnot, they click a button that says, I'm here. The office gets a notification. They have an iPad in front of them. It pops up. Bobby, John is here.
Okay.
And it has all my documents and everything included, like my insurance and whatnot. And then when they're ready to see me, they just click come in and the app says, you can come in now. It's super simple.
So it's working.
Yeah. We're approaching over 100,000 patients on it already.
So talk about how you roll a product out like that. Like what sequentially has to happen for you to be able to say, okay, this has succeeded?
I mean, first you have to build it.
Okay.
And that's not a given.
Right.
Right. So
how long did it take to build that?
I mean, we started in February. And we launched in, you know, mid-April.
Okay.
And I'm not from the medical field.
Right.
So, you know, you got to learn how the system kind of works, how the front desk works. But Band of Coders, you know, that's been our whole life, is like we talk to other people and ask, how does your business work?
Right.
And then we write code. So it came very easy for us to do those interviews and talk to the front desk and talk to the office manager and talk to the physicians and be like, okay, what is your flow? And how do we, you know, what are the face-to-face aspects that we need to deal with that are no longer going to be available to you
right.
and your patient? And how do we embody that in this app that the patient's going to use? And then what is the demographic? Like, you know, medicine has everyone.
Right.
Right. And a lot of other fields are more directed. Like if you're building a business app, you're going to have a certain demographic, but medicine, you have everyone. And they're not all technical savvy. And like, how do you make sure it works for anyone? And how do you make sure it's reliable? How do you make sure it's friendly? And how do you make sure, you know, a staff that, you know, is just going patient after patient, how do you make it work for them and not slow them down? Because
right.
the biggest complaint in medicine is technology has actually slowed down the doctor.
Right.
Right. They're not looking you in the eye anymore. They're sitting there fiddling with their computer. They get some error in the middle of appointment. They only have 7 minutes, 8 minutes with you. And so we didn't want that reputation.
So you're doing your research, then what?
Then we start building it. We mock it up. We, you know, do our wireframes and user flows. We start putting it in front of people on paper at least and saying, like, what do you think? Click through it and, you know, really start to understand the nuances of what we need to build.
So how many people do you, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want, but how many people do you have to ask, hey, would you take a look at this and see if it works for you? Like, what's the success rate you have?
I mean, we...
People saying yes.
We were going to actual offices.
Okay.
So we're not talking to patients yet.
Right.
Patients were a little easier because I'm a patient.
That's what I mean. How many offices are saying, yeah, we'll see if this works.
Oh, it wasn't too hard because of COVID.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, our promise to them is we'll get your patient load back up to full.
Okay.
With COVID.
You told them that ahead of time.
Yeah. We'll get you back to full speed ahead.
Okay.
With COVID and your waiting room will be empty and you're seeing as many patients every day. That was our promise.
Okay.
And that's what's our goal, to figure that out. So it did bring them revenue. So they were willing to listen.
Okay.
So, you know, we talked around 5 to make sure we had like a good combination.
All here in Atlanta?
Yeah. Like we talked to different kinds. We talked to dentists and we talked to pediatricians. We talked to eye doctors. Like just try and get a little bit of everything because it should be any healthcare provider.
Wow. Okay. So let's just stick with 2020. So you're doing wonderful things like this. What did the, I mean, you're a distributed company. You're all over the place. And I would imagine a lot of people, they're already working remotely with your company, right? So what did 2020 look like different than what it looked like in the past with Band of Coders?
I mean,
from a work standpoint.
I think for the technology world, we've been doing this for 10 plus years.
Yeah.
You know, because talent has been so hard to find and talent has been so expensive in some centers that, you know, we had to branch out.
So why is that? Why is talent so hard to find in your industry?
Everyone wants them.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the saying like, software is eating the world. So the idea is, I always say, it's like rebuilding the whole planet in code. It's a big project.
Let's stick with this for a minute. So if everybody's wanting that kind of worker and there's a shortage, so what would you say to a group of 20-somethings or late teens right now? If you had 100 people in the room, just, you know, hiving off of people, 100 people from Atlanta, that age group, what are you telling them as they're thinking about the future?
Yeah, I mean, I'd encourage them to find their spot, you know, in this world of, you know, software is not going anywhere and it's actually going to influence every single part of the work world.
Right.
So, you know, get comfortable with it, you know, don't fight it. And if you can, like, I don't think coding is for everyone. It does take a certain temperament, but there's also coding has become a very wide field as well. And so, you know, the general public uses it as just coding.
Right.
But there are so many aspects of that.
Right.
And, you know, I would encourage them to explore what those are and see if any of them kind of catch their interest. Because it is a great place to be. Like, it's an exciting spot to be.
So how do you recruit talent?
For us, we look for passion. Like, a lot of the questions you asked today are the questions we asked too. It's just like, how early were you starting to think about this stuff? Would you do this even if it wasn't the hottest job in the world? Because, you know, you do want to separate. Those are there just because.
Where are you asking those questions?
Anywhere. Schools. on discussion boards, asking people.
So, yeah. Okay. So what I'm saying is, how does someone get recruited by Band of Coders? Where do I need to show up?
You could just apply.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of referrals. We get a lot of referrals.
Okay.
So like a lot of our clients would be like, you know, and it's good. Like I think it means a lot when a client calls and says like.
Like percentage. What percentage are referrals?
Probably 80%.
That you end up hiring?
Yeah. I mean, we have a high bar. So,
right.
You know, we don't have anything called a junior developer.
Right.
Like we don't even have that position.
You're diving in deep as soon as you come on board.
Yeah. So we would, you know, we might help someone find that junior position somewhere else.
Right.
And then they'll keep an eye on us and we'll hire them 2 years later or 4 years later and bring them on board. But, you know, right now we, because it's growing so quickly and we're bringing on clients and we're making pretty big promises right from day one.
Right.
You know, we will start with intermediate to advanced.
Okay.
Right off the bat.
So with COVID, you know, it's interesting. This is probably another conversation that I'd love to have with you, maybe even not here, but we can dive into a little bit here. So when you're recruiting talent, I mean, people are all over the place now. There's not like, we're just going to look at Silicon Valley or we're just going to look at, you're looking everywhere. Mm-hmm. So where are there pockets of people that tend to pop up in a part of the country that are getting recruited by Band of Coders, or is it just anywhere?
Oh, the US-based ones?
Yeah.
So we'll try, and when we're recruiting in the US, we'll stay near one of our offices, and okay. The main reason is time zone.
Okay.
So a lot of the Band of Coders projects are going to be, you know, new ideas, cutting edge. We pride ourselves on making sure we're not building outdated software, so we try to find the most efficient and modern way of building things so that our clients are getting the bang for the buck and longevity of their code. And so we're in constant communication with them. And so time zone is something we haven't found a way to get around.
Okay.
So we don't hire in countries where, you know, our client's sleeping.
Right. Okay.
While the developers are awake.
Okay.
Our client, we need to be able to ask and talk questions, and we all also need to be able to talk to each other. So we cluster based on time zone.
Okay. So proximity does matter to a degree, sort of.
I mean, like for us, we have a big center in Argentina.
Okay.
It's farther away, but it's on the same line, like time zone-wise.
Right.
So yes, it does matter. Maybe not distance, but where you are.
So I've noticed something about you, Bobby. You really enjoy pouring into just people that are kind of coming along in their craft. You enjoy mentoring. You enjoy identifying someone who has potential and kind of working with them a little bit. Can you talk about the way you go about mentoring young talent?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I do look for good bones.
Okay.
So, you know, do they, their work ethic, you know, how their aspirations, where they want to be, you know, do they look at, I always tell someone young is, you know, you got to treat this like you're still in school. And the way school worked is you studied for an exam all night, weekends. There's no such thing as evenings and weekends.
Okay.
You're just in school. And, you know, if you're going to work for me, it's like, we're going to do work during business hours and then you're going to study the rest of the time to be ready for the next day. Because I'm not going to treat you like a child. Right? I'm going to give you real accountability. And I mean, my general approach is you can only learn so much from a book.
Right.
You got to actually do it.
Right.
And so I try my best to give exposure to young people, give them exposure way beyond their years.
Okay.
To accelerate their learning. And then, you know, I'll be the safety net for them. And that's why I go back to, why do I keep a chunk of my day available?
Right.
For not if something goes wrong, when something goes wrong.
Right.
Because I'm the safety net for a lot of people who I've put over their head.
Okay. Wow. So what tends to come up, what tends to be the one thing that does go wrong a lot that you're having to deal with?
No, I don't think I could say one thing. I think everything can go wrong.
Okay.
Like anyone can miss a deadline.
Anything that can go wrong, could go wrong, mm-hmm. does go wrong.
Anyone can miss a deadline. Anyone can type a number wrong or mishap something. And, you know, you got to go in there and straighten it out for them and work it out. But I mean, we have space for do that. So we have the margin to take care of them. And when we're working with our lead engineers, you know, I'm mentoring them. They might not be young out of school. They're all very experienced, 20 years experience, but I'm mentoring them on working with business folks.
Right.
Right. Working with visionaries, kind of understanding the business that they're building, not just the code. And that's why they're here. They can write the code with one hand tied behind their back. They're so good at that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're here to learn the other aspects. And that's what we're telling our clients is you basically have a technical co-founder with Bandicoders, someone who's really, truly interested in the business you're building, not just looking for a way to disappear and write code.
Right.
Though they have the ability to do both. So they also love working with the engineering team on making your vision come to life.
What do you, 5 years from now, what do you think Band of Coders could look like? If you can even talk about that. Because maybe, I know you have a grand plan. You're well planned, well thought through what's going to happen.
I'd love the reputation in the cities that we're in, that we're the go-to group that you can trust. You know, we're looking to be a boutique in every city that we're in. We hope to find the top 10% of engineers in that city and hopefully recruit one of them to lead our office. And, you know, it's this two-pronged thing. We hope to take that lead engineer and really mature them on being more than just a coder.
Right.
And then we look to bring really these ideas that visionaries have, whether they're in corporations or whether they're startups, to life, because we do believe a lot of these ideas have made the world a better place.
Right. Now, the Atlanta Braves, I mean, it's public knowledge that they're a client of yours. I mean, you have it on your website. So can you talk about any of the details behind them being a client?
Let's just say we were working. I mean, right now the stadiums aren't, I don't know if people are going.
No. I mean, well, not to baseball games.
Not to baseball games.
And there's only a handful of people that are going to basketball games.
Right.
I think the Hawks, the Atlanta Hawks, allow a few people into their, I mean, it's February right now. This podcast isn't going to come out probably till April, but I think the Hawks allow a few people. The Raptors, I don't think, allow anybody. I don't think.
Yeah.
Are they even playing in Toronto?
They're pretty strict in Toronto. They weren't for the playoffs, but I don't know how it's working right now.
Okay.
No, were they in Florida or something?
That's right. They were in Tampa.
Yeah. So for the Braves, we had built, you know, pretty well something in the stadiums where you could take an app. It was an app to take a picture of someone and it would turn it into a baseball card.
Okay.
And so there was a printer right there and you would get an official baseball card with your picture and some stats on it.
Okay. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's next for you?
I think getting through COVID. You know, I mean, I think even though we're all used to working remote, it is still a challenge. I mean, our model at Bandicoders is we do work face-to-face with the visionary, like our lead engineer. That's why we are in multiple cities.
Okay.
So
you're not just doing Zoom calls.
Right. But we're doing them now. But we do want to get back to, there's nothing like a whiteboard.
Right.
And a few bright minds in a room.
Okay.
Designing and dreaming up the next big thing.
Okay.
And we do want to get back to that. And we do miss that. And I do think there's something being lost still on the innovation side, on the fact that we can't do that. So I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, I think what we're seeing for sure is COVID has introduced, like, really opened up everyone's mind. I mean, it went really quiet right when we started with this and everyone kind of pulled back. And then people started thinking of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And the world will never go back. And a lot of the progress has been technology-based. So
right.
I think the ideas are going to be flowing and there's going to be lots of work to do. And it's just a matter of picking the right ones. So I'm looking forward to that.
What do you read much these days?
Not so much these days. Not as much as I used to when I was out more.
Okay. So what have you read over the past 5 years? Just one thing that you read that you thought, okay, this is really helpful. This was more helpful than not.
I was more rereading some of the classics. So Crossing the Chasm is a classic book.
Okay.
And it really talks about, it's nothing to do with really engineering as much as like product adoption.
Right.
And how does a product go to market? And what are the different stages of the people that, you know, progress through that? So you look at like the product we released and, you know, in April, it would have been the early adopters.
Right.
And then it kind of moves up that chain until it becomes mainstream. Okay. And it's amazing how some of those truths like are still true to this day. So, you know, I think I'm more in a season of reading old books.
Yeah.
Not looking for the new ideas.
Yeah.
But applying some of the old lessons to new ideas.
Okay.
It's kind of where I am. My world already has enough, like just keeping up with tech is like exhausting, right? There's things being released every day. And in our business, we never want to be, for the sake of our clients, we never want to be building on yesterday. And that happens a lot where you can build something. If you use yesterday, it would cost $100,000. And right. If you use today, it costs $10,000. Right. And the only difference is one engineer knew about it and one didn't. And that's why you got a different bill. And so we really pride ourselves on finding the most effective way to use our clients' dollars.
Okay. So if I'm 17, 18 years old, and this is the industry I want to land in, I want to be a computer engineer, I want to work for Band of Coders, I'm about to enter college, what would you tell that 17, 18 year old?
Yeah, start coding. Like look for...
Like right away?
Yeah, just get your summer jobs, like start finding ways to get exposure. Not about the money right now at all. Your high school, college kid, just live off your parents.
Okay.
As much as you can, or keep eating bagels and cream cheese, whatever yes. It is that keeps your lifestyle.
My kids are in college right now. I hope they don't hear that part. Yes.
Keep your lifestyle affordable and then go get the exposure. Exposure is what it's going to be. And if you can find the right person and you can tell them you're going to help them out, no charge. And in return, what you want is exposure to real world problems.
Okay.
That's gold.
Okay.
And I think the sooner you can get to real world problems and start exercising those muscles in your brain on taking a real world problem and then seeing a solution come to life for it, just like we did with 1MD, like literally as we're sitting here, thousands of people are sitting in parking lots mm-hmm. waiting for the app to say, come in.
Oh, wow.
Right. Yeah. And we're sitting here and that's like happening all over the place. And they're just staring at that screen and waiting.
Right.
But that's an example of a problem identified, problem solved, and then given out and is being used. And that's the power of software. And that was literally done during COVID. So like I was literally, the whole thing happened from my bedroom.
Wow.
I never went anywhere. Right?
Wow.
From concept to study to build to deploy, all of it. Never left my house.
So what do you do for fun? Just curious.
For me?
I mean, we know each other a little bit, so I know some of the things you enjoy.
Yeah. But. I mean, I did love watching the Raptors.
Yeah.
I do think it was more fun pre-COVID. I did like the fan part in the audience, so.
Yeah.
Watching basketball is a big one.
At least when they had Kawhi Leonard.
Yes. Well, we did okay the year after. We didn't make it, but it was close.
They're still pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't think they have a winning record, but I still think, I mean, the Hawks don't have a winning record, but.
We have a few pieces to fill out.
Yeah.
Then, you know, I've really lately got into making cocktails.
Okay.
And learning how to do that really well. So that's been fun. So like any sort of new...
Like, did you just pick that up during COVID. The pandemic?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I think I've heard you talk about that before.
Cooking, like just, you know, again, not that I like to cook every day, but I've got my, you know, 7 or 8 core meals and I'm always trying to add one more.
Right.
Like that. So I think everything still comes to some sort of building.
Okay.
Building something.
Right.
In some sort of way. And then we got 4 kids.
Right.
You know, that ranges in ages. So... Got a couple teenagers, which keep at least my mind wondering what to do.
One or two of them going to follow in your shoes, you think?
My daughter is applying for industrial engineering at Georgia Tech.
Okay.
So got Very one cool. engineer.
Very cool.
So far.
That's good. Very cool. So what does next week look like for Bobby John? We'll conclude with that.
What does next week look like? I mean, I just look at every week as moving the needle forward. You know, how do I either push one of my employees to be better next week than they were this week? You know, how do I empower them and teach them? Or one of our clients or one of our products? And, you know, I really do take it 1 week at a time. Like,
okay.
I tend to be more of a, I think 10 years ahead and I think one day ahead and I don't have too much in the middle.
Okay.
But that's, to me, it's move the needle.
So how does someone find out about Band of Coders?
Bandofcoders.com.
Okay. And you guys have a podcast too, right?
We do. It's more engineering based.
Okay. So, like, who's your audience?
Engineers.
Just in, okay.
Yeah, it's to attract. I mean, we're teaching engineers how to be better leaders.
Okay. What's the name of the podcast?
It's The Bandicoter Show.
Bandicoter Show. Okay. Well, brother, it's been great having you on the podcast. So thankful that you were able to drop by. This has been fun.
Thanks, Travis.
Thank you.
Find us on Instagram at VG Voyager and join the conversation for today's episode. Next week on the podcast, Travis sits down with Dr. Vanita Boswell, founder of the Valo Group and executive producer of the Netflix original documentary, Rooting for Runa. She shares the power of purpose and how it fuels her as an entrepreneur, changemaker, fundraiser, filmmaker, wife, and mother. So make sure you hit subscribe so you don't miss the next one.
This episode of the podcast has been brought to you by Core Media. Editing and mixing by Kevin Duthu. Recording and studio coordination by Beth Ravencourt. Camera and video editing by Will Gehring. Project management by Origami. Music featured in season one is entitled To Sleep Perchance by Teague from the album As Ice Would Do and is available wherever music is found.
This has been Voyager, a Vaughn Group podcast highlighting innovative leaders who get stuff done. Join us every Wednesday to journey through the lives and minds of creative visionaries, artists, and innovators who are changing the world with their work.